From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jacob Resnick. Coming up, Alaska Fish and Game has a new commercial fisheries chief. Police in Unalaska say they've exhausted all leads over a disappeared deckhand. A culinary contest pitting seafood producers large and small is coming to Juneau. And a former fisherman made famous on Discovery Channel's Deadliest Catch is found dead in a Homer hotel room. But first, Alaska's seafood industry touts its economic muscle. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska seafood industry employs more than 70,000 people and generated more than $3.3 billion in wholesale value, according to an industry-funded report released this week. The Marine Conservation Alliance, an industry group largely made up of seafood processors, harvesters, and community development organizations, commissioned the study that was conducted by the firm Northern Economics of Anchorage. MCA President Frank Kelty says the report reaffirms Alaska's place as a major player in the nation's seafood industry and says the industry outlook is positive.
We have eight ports out of the top 20 in the nation are based in Alaska for fisheries value, and I think we had 11 ports for volume in the top 50 U.S. ports in the nation, and I think that's very impressive. And I think we expect good things in 2011 with the pollock fishery increases, the fisheries performing well. It's supposed to be another good year for salmon. High values continue on the crab fisheries, and I assume it'll be the same on halibut and sable fish. So I think it's going to be a good year for harvesters and processors in Alaska.
Kelty says the report can be used as a lobbying tool in Juneau to convince legislators outside of coastal communities of the economic benefit of fisheries.
I think it helps educate maybe legislators that are on the rail belt that aren't too familiar with what goes on in the seafood industry and rural parts of Alaska and fishery-dependent communities. I think it'll open up their eyes of the amount of employment, the amount of tax dollars that are paid to the state. I think a lot of people forget about the revenue generated and 50% of it on the state's share taxes for the Alaska Fisheries Business Tax and the Resource Landing Tax are a tremendous amount of money to the state. And the money that harvesters pay on their 5 cent a gallon marine fuel tax. And on Alaska, we sell over 40 million gallons a year in diesel fuel. So the revenue generated by marine fuel tax, revenue generated by fisheries taxes paid to the state and shared back to coastal communities, the trickle-down effect for longshoremen in these communities, the tremendous amount of support sector businesses in communities such as Kodiak, Ketchikan, Unalaska, it's tremendous.
The data of the report was largely drawn from government statistics compiled by NOAA and the state of Alaska. The report is available online at marineconservationalliance.org. Alaska Department of Fish and Game Commissioner Cora Campbell has appointed longtime regional supervisor Jeff Regnart to head the Commercial Fisheries Division. KDLG's Mike Mason has more from Dillingham.
Jeff Regnart is well known in Bristol Bay through his role as the regional supervisor for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He's been serving that position since 2003, and it put him in charge of program administration and supervision of all management and research activities, including those for Bristol Bay, Cook Inlet, and Prince William Sound. Regnart is already on the job as the director of the Commercial Fisheries Division, and he's been heavily involved in the ongoing Board of Fisheries meeting in Anchorage focused on Upper Cook Inlet. Regnart says he doesn't take over the division with any particular priorities that he wants to implement.
You know, I've been in the position now for 5 days, and so I want to be a little cautious about suggesting change, just because I got to get more familiar with some of the, you know, the facets of the job, some of the personnel I'm not real familiar with. So I'm just going to take some time here over the next couple months and get familiar with those pieces that I haven't really been involved with much. But at the same time, you know, I think some of the things that you definitely want to maintain is, one, access to the resource. I mean, that's the job we're in, is provide access to the resource for the users, and at the same time make sure it's done in a scientifically sound manner. And I think that for the most part, we're pretty successful at that. There's, you know, many economies, coastal communities, interior communities that are dependent on that access to make their living through commercial fisheries. And we're going to maintain that and maybe even improve it a little bit.
Jeff Regnard started his career with Fish and Game as a fish and wildlife technician in 1984, and he became a biologist in 1990. He has a Bachelor of Science degree in biology from Western Washington University and a master's degree in fishery management from Humboldt State University. Regnard says a big part of his job will be to work with the sport fish and subsistence divisions to reach some common goals.
You know, and that's one of the things that we're tasked with, is making sure that it works together, because we're all one department and all charged with, you know, natural resource management, conservation, be it with a subsistence user group or commercial or a sport.
In his former position as the regional supervisor for the Central Region, Regnard supervised some of Alaska's most significant commercial fisheries, including the sockeye salmon fishery in Bristol Bay. The last couple of years have in general been pretty good years for the commercial fishing industry in Alaska, and Regnard says the outlook appears to be good.
These are good days. We have abundance of natural resources, be it fish, shellfish, groundfish. The excess of values of a lot of these fisheries are some of the highest we've seen in 20 years, and catch rates at or above 20-year averages. That equates to high excess of values for a lot of the major fisheries. We've seen some values in these fisheries that we haven't seen since the late 80s, and that's just fantastic. These are good days.
Jeff Regnard's new position as the director of the ADF&G Division of Commercial Fisheries does not require legislative approval. However, he was appointed by Commissioner Cora Campbell, whose position does require legislative approval. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
A former deckhand of one of the crab boats featured on Discovery Channel's Deadliest Catch series was found dead Tuesday in his hotel room in Homer. 33-year-old Justin Tennyson had worked aboard the fishing vessel Time Bandit, and as KBBI's Aaron Selvig reports, police say they don't suspect foul play.
Justin K. Tennyson was found dead in his room at the Best Western Bidarka Inn Tuesday after a member of the hotel's cleaning staff became suspicious when he did not check out of his room. A maintenance man discovered Tennyson's body and reported it to Homer police at 12:52 p.m. Homer Police Department Lieutenant Randy Rosencrantz says police do not suspect foul play in Tennyson's death, but their investigation is ongoing, at least until an autopsy can be performed by the State Medical Examiner's Office in Anchorage.
We don't have any reason to suspect foul play, but just as a precaution, we want to find out more specifically what the cause of death was.
Rosencrantz says police have not yet been able to contact anyone who may have seen Tennyson before he died. He says there were liquor and beer bottles found in his room, along with a small amount of marijuana. Officials from Discovery Communications Incorporated, the parent company of Discovery Channel, did not return phone calls in time for this story, but said in a statement that the company is, quote, saddened by the passing of Time Bandit crew member Justin Tennyson, and we send our sympathies to his entire family and fellow crew members during this most difficult time. Tennyson is survived by his father, sister, grandparents, and two children, a son and a daughter. On his Facebook page Wednesday, Time Bandit Captain Jonathan Hillstrand wrote, quote, life is short. Be sure to tell everyone you love them. Justin loved his kids very much and will really be missed. Rosencrantz says Homer police are getting an unusual amount of press inquiries about the case from all over the country.
We pretty much explain what we can. We try not to speculate to any extent, and just give out the facts. I'm sure we'll be able to give more information to the various media groups that are contacting us when we get the autopsy results.
Rosencrantz says autopsy results from the medical examiner's office typically come back in less than a week. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selvig.
Alaska environmental regulators say salvage operations for a fishing vessel that went aground near Afognak Island are expected to begin in April. The State Department of Environmental Conservation says all remaining fuel on the 86-foot Midnight Sun has been removed. Officials say the February 11th grounding spilled as much as 4,500 gallons of diesel fuel. The DEC says crews did not detect a visible sheen around the boat or shoreline during an inspection Saturday at the site, about 36 miles northwest of Kodiak. The DEC says commercial fisheries likely won't be affected, After the grounding, the Coast Guard evacuated the crew, and the incident is under investigation.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
Police in Unalaska say they've exhausted all leads in a search for a 56-year-old fisherman who has been missing since Christmas time. John F. Courage left his personal effects on the fishing vessel Alaska Trojan before apparently vanishing off the face of the earth. Following more than a month of intense searching, Unalaska Police Sergeant Matt Betson says the trail is cold.
Right now we have no other leads to pursue. In other words, we've contacted everyone who we thought might have any contact with him, and I mean that's like local businesses, the airports, all of the boats, use the Coast Guard to radio messages out to the boats that weren't in port, his next of kin, all the various people who have had contact with him that we know of over the years.
On Alaska City Police, Alaska State Troopers, and U.S. Coast Guard have all helped search for Courage since he disappeared December 29th. But at this point, Betson says the case will remain inactive unless new evidence comes to light.
When we reach a point that we literally have no one else that's told us about even a rumor of something else to check out, and we've done several searches and haven't been able to locate it, any sign of him, we move to a point where it's like, well, we have done everything we can think of.
Courage was last seen at Alaska Ship Supply in Unalaska. Eyewitnesses say he was wearing a red shirt, black jacket, and jeans.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. On the web at amsea.org.
Each year, the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation holds a culinary contest called Symphony of Seafood. And as KDLG's Daisha Eaton reports, the competition attracts entries from the largest processors to the smallest entrepreneurs.
Best seafood in Alaska. Now that's a tough choice. A choice judges at the annual Symphony of Seafood Products Contest have been making for 18 years. Jim Browning with the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation that sponsors the contest explains how it works.
We usually get a panel of judges, chefs, people in the seafood industry, food writers, and they sit down and go through the individual products one by one.
Browning says the contest really levels the playing field, allowing entrepreneurs a chance to promote their products right alongside big companies. He adds there are always a few surprise products. This year it was gluten-free Alaska King crab cakes by a company called the Crabby Sisters.
Crab cakes, your typical round crab cakes, but these are gluten-free. And as it turns out, gluten-free is a very fast-growing segment of the food industry, and their product was very well received.
This year's first place winner in the food service category was Crispanko Alaska Pollock Mini Sliders by Trident Seafood. The retail winner was sockeye salmon with Tuscan herb sauce by Orca Bay Seafoods. Wild Alaska Peppered and Smoked Sockeye Salmon by Trident Seafoods won the smoked category and the grand prize for the most overall votes. The third event of the contest takes place Tuesday, March 8th at the Juneau Westmark Baranoff Hotel. The first place winners from each category and the grand prize winner will receive round-trip airfare to the Boston Seafood Show in March, plus booth space at the show. To learn more about the contest and its winners, go to www.symphonyofseafood.com. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KDLG's Mike Mason and Daisha Eaton in Dillingham, KVBI's Aaron Selvig in Homer, and KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jacob Resnick.